I hope that the renewed interest on the 50th anniversary of Whitman's Rampage will help social scientists discover the cause of such heinous acts.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold, the Hogg Foundation podcast. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more about the foundation, our history, and our programs, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Last August, the University of Texas marked the 50th anniversary of a historic tragedy, the 1966 UT Tower shooting massacre. At the time, our executive director, Dr. Octavio Martinez, posted a blog post which read, and I quote, "It is our community-mindedness and willingness to love one another, as well as our ability to resist fear, stigma, and scapegoating, that provides the surest bulwark against the dark forces that drive individuals like Charles Whitman to perpetuate inexplicable acts upon their fellow human beings." It is fitting that the 50th anniversary of the Tower shooting overlaps with the 75th anniversary of the founding of the Hogg Foundation. We have been in a reflective mood over the past couple of years, using the opportunity given by our anniversary to resurface parts of our identity that seem especially relevant right now. Even before the 1966 tragedy, the Hogg Foundation sought to broaden the conversation beyond mental illness in the clinical sense, using its stature to address larger questions of trauma, tragedy, and injustice. We were there when it happened. The Hogg Foundation's offices were located in the UT Tower at the time of the shooting. And we were even more there in the aftermath, leading the charge in developing campus mental health services in response to the tragedy. Our first guest, Linda Swan Adkins, was a young employee of the Hogg Foundation on the day that Charles Whitman opened fire from the observation deck, killing 14 people and wounding 32 others over the course of 90 minutes. She is here with us to recount her experience of the event and to tell us what she's been up to in the decades since.
This is not an interview, but rather Linda was kind enough to take time from her busy schedule to pre-record her recollections and her reflections on that terrible day. First, as she tells us where she was, who she was with, and how it is that people responded as the scene unfolded.
I had just graduated from UT in May and started working at the Hogg Foundation as a secretary when the tower shooting occurred. On August the 1st, 1966, around noon, I was about to leave for lunch. I decided to stop in the restroom, which was in the stairwell, before I left. When I opened the door, I saw lots of smoke and heard a man yelling, "Help me, help me, help me." Then I heard a loud noise like someone pushing down metal folding chairs on a concrete floor. I had never been around guns, so I didn't recognize the sound. I ran to get my boss, Dave Latz, who was a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. He realized that someone was shooting and gathered everyone into an office furthest from the stairwell. Other people in the office that day were Dr. Bert Krueger-Smith, the Foundation Assistant Director Tex, whose last name I don't remember, the receptionist Elaine Zinn, a retired Army sergeant who ran the mail room, and a young woman who helped him in the mail room, and another secretary named Dorothy. The Foundation Executive Director, Dr. Robert Sutherland, was not there that day. I was supposed to have lunch with my mother that day, and I found out later on that Dr. Sutherland had called her to tell her I was okay. We didn't have a radio or a television. Our only contact was through the telephone. We contacted Dr. Ira Isco, the chairman of the psychology department and a consultant with the Hogg Foundation. He told us what was going on and kept us appraised of the situation the whole time once the shooting started. From our window on the 24th floor, we would see people fall, and then we would hear the rifle shot. There was a disconnect in the timing. He shot people coming out of the Varsity Theater, which at that time was on the corner of 24th Street and the Drag. We tried to warn them, but they couldn't hear us. A man was shot but not killed on the west side of the tower. He lay there for several hours on the concrete just below us, and it was hot. I believe the Hogg Foundation contacted him later to do follow-up. He was shooting people as far away as the law school. My husband was in law school, and I knew he was either there or at his afternoon job at the Texas Education Agency on 11th Street. Whitman shot a boy in front of the TEA building, so I was scared for him until I could finally talk to him and find out that he was okay. At one point, Whitman stopped firing for about 30 minutes. We found out later on that it was so he could reload his guns. At the time, however, we were afraid that he might be coming down the stairs to look for other targets. Had he done so, there was nothing to keep him from coming into the foundation. The office doors had no locks. We piled all the desks and chairs in front of the doors in the offices where we were and hoped for the best. Of course, none of us had a gun. Incidentally, at that time, none of the campus police carried guns. That became a hot topic of discussion following the massacre. Should the campus police be armed? That discussion raged on for years. And I think it's interesting that on the 50th anniversary of Whitman's murderous rampage, it's now legal for anyone with a concealed handgun permit to carry a gun on campus. When the shooting stopped and we were given the all clear from Dr. Isco, we all started to leave. It was obvious that no more work was going to get done that day. I punched the button for the one elevator. When it opened on our floor, it was filled with police, and they were clustered around Whitman's body. This sight was more traumatic for me than the shooting itself. I decided to wait until the elevator had gone down and come back up to leave. I worked at the foundation until the next May, when my husband finished law school and had taken the bar. We left Austin for his 4-year commitment to the Army JAG Corps. I lost touch with all my friends at the Hogg Foundation.
Next, Linda tells us about the Hogg Foundation's role in the aftermath of the shooting.
The one issue discussed at the foundation after the shooting was a responsibility, if any, that the health center had for follow-up concerning patients making dangerous threats. Apparently, Whitman had been seen at the University Health Center and said that he felt like getting up on the tower and shooting people. He was given an appointment to return, but he did not keep that appointment. Was it the responsibility of the doctors at the health center to make sure he came back? Should they have called the police? Should they have notified the university administration? A case can be made, however, that it was not highly unusual for students to threaten suicide by jumping off the tower. Occasionally, unfortunately, a student would indeed jump off the tower. However, compared to the number of threats, student suicide were rare. Still, the Hogg Foundation, being a mental health foundation, was troubled by these and other questions. I'm not aware that any of them were ever solved.
Mass shooting incidents can draw obsessive interest from people, and this one was no different. An entire culture has grown up around the Whitman shooting, reconstructing and analyzing the event, dissecting the shooter's motives and psyche, etc. So here is Linda on how connected she is to any of that, and how much or how little she likes to talk about her experience.
After the shooting, the tower was closed. Those of us who worked there had to show our keys to gain admittance. Even though the tower itself was closed for weeks people would come to campus just to see the bullet holes in the concrete. I don't mind talking about the incident, but I've not been involved in any of the cult following that springs up after a tragedy like this one. I hope that the renewed interest on the 50th anniversary of Whitman's rampage will help social scientists discover the cause of such heinous acts and to learn more about which stresses make college students crack.
And finally, here is Linda on her life's trajectory in the 5 decades since the shooting.
The high point of my life since leaving the Hogg Foundation would be my 2 sons and my 6 grandsons. In 1989, I remarried to a wonderful man who was a Houston OB-GYN physician. I inherited 2 more sons, 4 more grandsons, and 1 granddaughter. My family keeps me happy and busy. Even still, currently I'm working as district director for State Representative Dr. John Zerwas, who is an anesthesiologist. I've known and admired Dr. Zerwas for 25 years through our joint service on the Memorial Hermann Foundation Board and through my years of lobbying for the Texas Society of Anesthesiologists. Dr. Zerwas and my husband, Dr. Jim Adkins, practiced together for years at Memorial Hermann Southwest Hospital. For the past 3 years, I've been serving as district director for Representative Zerwas. The job entails representing him in the district at functions and handling some constituent concerns. I love my job. I feel so fortunate to be able to work at something I truly enjoy. I love my family. 3 out of 4 of our sons and their families live here in Houston, and my older son isn't too far away. He's up near Denton. Truly, life is good.
That was Linda Swan Adkins, a former employee of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health and firsthand witness to the Charles Whitman shooting more than 5 decades ago. Linda, if you're listening, thank you so much for sharing your incredible recollections with us.
As I alluded to earlier, the Hogg Foundation was instrumental in the expansion of campus mental health services after the Whitman shooting. This next segment features Dr. William S. Bush, a professor of history at Texas A&M University and author of Circuit Riders for Mental Health, The Hogg Foundation and the Transformation of Mental Health in Texas, where he discusses this history.
So the UT Tower shooting, of course, took place on August 1st, 1966. The Hogg Foundation's offices were in the UT Tower on the 24th floor, so it only happened a few stories above the Hogg Foundation offices. The shooter, Charles Whitman, was a former Marine. As would later be discovered, he had visited the UT Student Health Clinic only a couple of weeks before the tower shooting and had met with a psychiatrist named Maurice Heatley. Heatley had not really noticed anything that could have indicated he would do something like what he ended up doing. The problem that was related to mental health here was that student counseling services were fairly non-existent at the time. And most universities in the country did not really have anywhere close to the student counseling services that we now take for granted at colleges and universities today. The person who took the lead on this for the foundation was Ira Isco, who, of course, would train a generation of community psychologists in the 1960s and 70s. And he was an alum of UCLA, which did have one of the first student counseling services in the country, and he went to UCLA in the wake of the Whitman shooting and studied what they did and spent some time there and came back and led in the development of a more robust student counseling services that included a 24/7 hotline for people to be able to call if they were in distress. And that hotline would be staffed with people who, not necessarily people who had academic training, but who were good listeners. he created off-site services as well outside of the campus. They experimented with a coffee shop using a coffee shop as a place to meet with people who were experiencing distress. They called it the listening ear. They became really a path breaker. When I interviewed him, ISCO claimed to me that the suicide rate at UT Austin became one of the lowest in the country over the next 20 years as a result of the more robust student counseling services that were developed in the wake of the Whitman shooting.
That clip was taken from a longer video that is on our YouTube page if you'd like to go look for it. If you're interested in the book Circuit Riders for Mental Health, you can find it on Amazon.com. And that does it for this episode of Into the Fold. Before we go, I would like to announce that the Hogg Foundation has just recently published the third edition of A Guide to Understanding Mental Health Systems and Services in Texas. It is basically a more than 400-page compendium of information about the Texas mental health system, and as such, about as comprehensive a guide as you'll find anywhere. And it is available on our website. If you go to hogg.utexas.edu, in the public policy drop-down menu on our homepage, you ought to be able to navigate to a page where there is a link to the PDF version. So we're just trying to save some trees here. And please, we encourage everybody, it's free, we encourage everybody to download it and check it out. It's a pretty exhaustively compiled resource and really an excellent primer about the very complex mental health system here in our state. And that does it for Into the Fold. This is Ike Evans, Hogg Foundation for Mental Health. Thanks so much for joining us.